Welcome to the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Kennedy, and I'm here to help you become the very best version of yourself. Hey guys, welcome back to this week's episode of the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. Today's show is an audio grab that I took from a podcast I did last week with a friend of mine, Brett Hawke, on his show Inside with Brett Hawke. And we discussed overtraining, and I mean, Brett's show is particularly for swimmers. Brett was a former Olympian for Australia in the 2000 and 2004 Summer Olympics, so his show is based around swimming. He speaks to some really cool guests, so I was lucky to be part of the show. But we discuss overtraining and how a lot of athletes, and not just swimmers specifically, but athletes in general, and in my opinion, general pop as well, tend to overtrain or do too much. So I discussed how I think sometimes less is more and how we need to really focus on quality over quantity. So this is an audio grab from his show. Be sure to go and check that out as well. But if you enjoyed today's episode, as always, please do take a screenshot of the show and post it up on Instagram story for me. I'd love to get some feedback on your thoughts of this week's episode. And I'm looking forward to bringing you another show very soon. Hope you're having a fantastic day. And again, I hope you grab some value from today's show and you can get some takeaways on how important quality is with your training, more so than quantity.
All right, Dan Kennedy, welcome to the podcast, mate. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks, mate. Appreciate you having me on. I'm looking forward to the chat today.
Yeah, mate, no worries. Listen, we met about 18 months ago. You're a buddy of Michael Klim's, and we did some training together in LA a while back, and I found out you have your own podcast, the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast, which is highly successful and very well followed and has great information. So if anyone wants to jump onto an awesome podcast, you need to attach to that one, the one you're running. But so what was the premise behind it? Why'd you get into that?
Yeah, look, it's been about 3 years now. So before I first started it, I just started listening to podcasts myself. There was a handful of guys I was listening to. I think it was Lewis Howes, maybe Grant Cardone, and I think I just started to listen to Gary Vaynerchuk. And I remember thinking to myself, like, there's not really any health and fitness podcasts in Australia that that I knew of, or especially that none that were really doing well. And so I just kind of had the idea of starting a show, and you know, YouTube was pretty saturated, which it still is, and Instagram was already pretty saturated as well. So I thought I'd love to be able to help people on a different platform where no one else is. So I kind of procrastinated for a while, and then I was actually listening to an episode one day of, I think it might have been Grant's podcast, and he said something along the lines of, like, why wait till tomorrow to do something you can do today? So like that day I went onto this blog on how to start a podcast. And by the end of the day, had gone and bought a mic and recorded my first few episodes and submitted it to iTunes. And then since then, I haven't missed a week. So it's been about 3 years, and we're up to about 250 or so episodes. So yeah, it's been fun.
Man, I love it. Yeah, you got some real good information on there for just the average person and also the high-level athlete. You know, there's so much quality stuff, and you're just straight to the point, direct, and I love it. And it's kind of why I wanted to bring you on here today. You had a podcast that came out just last week or this week talking about quality over quantity, and it's something that swimmers and swim coaches argue over and fight over and have struggled with for many years. You know, swimmers and swim coaches and many swimmers will know this. We've been doing things the same way for 40 years. You know, like, I can't, going back as long as I can remember, we've been doing, you know, 10 or 11 swim sessions a week. We've been doing so many Ks, and this is the formula that everybody sticks to. And there's not, everybody's afraid to kind of break away from it. So I'm just intrigued to now get an outsider's point of view, somebody who's an expert in the field as well, of like, why has quantity been successful, but why are we moving away from it?
It's a really good question, and this is something that I think about a lot, and I talk to it a lot, with athletes, particularly over here in Australia with Aussie Rules athletes, AFL footballers, and those that are because let's be honest, most sports, as you've just mentioned, are in that same mindset of more is better. Mm. You know, the harder you work, the luckier you are. Yeah. And whoever works the hardest will get the best result. And I think that's where this whole kind of concept came from. Early days, I would assume, when people are just starting to get to the top of the game, they're probably looking at athletes that are at the top of the game, whether it be with swimming, whether it be with basketball, track and field, whatever it is. And they're probably doing a lot of work. So they're putting in the hours. They're obsessed with mastering their craft. So others look at that and go, all right, well, if I want to be that successful, I need to do what they're doing. So if they're training every day, if they're training twice a day, I need to do that too. And that's how I'll be successful. Now, I think for a lot of coaches out there that are still coaching that same principle, it's just an old school approach that more is better, and that the harder you work, the better your results are going to be. And, whoever puts in the most work is going to get the best results. But as you and I both know, I'm hopefully a lot more people starting to understand as well, it's just not the case. And, to an extent, yes, you do have to put in a lot more work than the average person to be a master of your craft and to be at the top of your game and whatever your industry or whatever your sport is. But in saying that, there comes a point in time where we reach diminishing returns physically and mentally, which I think, and the mental side of things, regardless of talking about physically, the mental side of things can be very taxing. And I think you see it a lot, particularly with individual sport athletes such as swimming, that you tend to reach a point where you've just burnt yourself out mentally from doing the same thing over and over again and always thinking that more is better. And I mean, I don't know if you've kind of experienced the same feeling, but me coming from an athletic background as well, and even now with work, like, it's hard sometimes to not get stuck in the mindset of, those days where you're having a rest day or where you're not doing as much training. You start to sit there, and if you think about it too much, you think to yourself, like, I should be doing more, or I'm not working hard enough, or I feel lazy because I'm not putting in the work. But as you touched on before with my episode this week, I was thinking about it a lot. And I think it might have been after you sent me a message the other day. It was about, so many people are focused on quantity over quality. Mm. And I see it a lot with the athletes I work with, but also just Gen Pop when it comes to losing body fat or comes to getting in shape. People go from doing nothing or maybe doing a little bit to just overdoing it in all areas, whether it be training, under eating, all different types of stuff, to the point where the mindset is more is better. And from my experience and from what I've seen in the industry and with most athletes, it's just not the case. And luckily now we're getting more and more research and evidence come out to show that you and I are on the right path in terms of starting to look at quality over quantity. And the more we can talk about that, the better, because there's just so much to learn about it. And I know myself, like, when I first started to kind of trust in the process, it's hard to get your head around, especially if you've come from a background of just doing more and more and more and more and more, thinking that the harder you work, the better your results are going to be. For someone to then say to you, like, hey, we actually need to do less and, like, far less, but focus on quality over quantity, it's hard to get your head around initially. But if you're willing to stick it out and give it a chance, I think most people, if not everyone, will be very, very surprised at how much better their results can be by reducing the amount they're doing, but actually increasing the quality.
Yeah. Mate, I had some experiences when I was swimming, 20, 25 years ago, with coaches who would just push me, and it was all about yardage and how far we'd swim. I'd get to the point where I'd be so sick that I'd be in bed for weeks, and then I'd come back and I'd be swimming faster than I was swimming the whole season, off 3 weeks of rest, not swimming a single stroke. I just did a podcast with Eamon Sullivan, who was the former world record holder in the 50 and the 100 freestyle. And he was talking about the times where he was swimming his fastest was when he was coming off an injury, where he's had surgery, he's gone in and he's recovering. And he's got 6 weeks to prepare instead of, 6 months, where when he had the 6 months, he was just getting pounded with work. But when he had 6 weeks, he was just really focused on how he was doing things technically, getting everything right, and swimming faster than he's ever swum. And you just hear so many stories like that over and over of people that, have situations like that,
Yeah, without a doubt. And you touched on a good point there. The time frame thing plays a big role, because particularly, I'm going to use the example again of Aussie rules footballers, and this applies to swimming as well. And I know we'll touch on that later in the show, but you look at like Aussie rules footballers, they go into their off season or their pre-season with the club in, you know, these days, they go in with the club, say at the end of November, some of the clubs are even going back in October. Mm. The season doesn't start until like April, like end of March, April. So they're in pre-season with their club for almost longer than the actual season. Mm. So when you think of it like that, they've like not only mentally, but like physically, they've started training. And mind you, the first couple of months are always the hardest. Like that's when the trainers are basically kind of just running them into the ground to see who's willing to work the hardest, and they try and build up that base early on. But if you think about that from a physical perspective, by the time you get to the start of the season, they've already done more work than what they're going to do for the whole season before they've even got to game to round one. Mm. So physically and mentally, they're burnt out. Whereas, you know, I've spoke about this with people over the years. I think a far more sustainable and effective approach would be to break that long off season into blocks. So, you know, up until Christmas, maybe there is no running. Maybe it is off legs conditioning so that you're not overdoing the legs. Maybe it is building up the strength that a lot of these players lack in their hamstrings and the glutes, so that when we get into the season, there's not as many soft tissue injuries. And then once you get to after Christmas, you put in that really high quality work for a short period of time leading into round one. So then as the season goes on, we're actually progressing. Whereas you find now, you watch the season and you see, you know, the soft tissue injuries and whatnot, the players are at peak fitness at like the start of the year when the season hasn't even started yet. And as the season goes on, they're going down. Like they're seeing that diminishing returns, not only, as I've said a couple of times already, but not only physically, but mentally as well. So, I mean, yeah, it is just such an old school approach. And I used an example the other day when I spoke to a client. They were asking me about how many times they should be training per week. And they said to me, you know, I saw the best results when, for a very short period of time, I was doing this, this, and this. And they're asking me if they should be training multiple times per day. And I just honestly said, like, look, if I said to you today, and you and I would be the same, Brett, if I told you tomorrow we're going to train three times for the day, there is no way, I don't care how good of an athlete you are, there's no way you can tell me that every single session is going to be at the best quality, particularly the first and second one. In the back of your head, you're going, all right, I've got to go in and swim X amount of laps at this intensity, but I've also got a strength session after lunch, and I've also got another swim tonight. I just don't see how you're getting the best quality out of that. Whereas if we break that down and we say, right, we're doing this swimming session today and then maybe some strength tonight, or tomorrow we're going to do half our strength in the morning and half at night, and in the middle of the day we're going to do some mobility so that the following day we can put in max effort in the pool. This needs to be a bit more thought put to how this programming's done, and as hard as it can be. And you know, I don't know what your opinion is on this, but I look at a lot of team sports now and I just think to myself, like, there's just too much pressure on the strength and conditioning coach or the performance coach to take a different approach to everyone else in the whole entire league or the whole entire sport, because they're so worried about what everyone else is going to say or what everyone else's opinion is, that the pressure's there, that if it doesn't get results straight away, they'll just get canned. Yeah. So, I mean, someone's got to be willing to take that different approach, even if it does mean initially things, you know, they may not project upwards the whole way through. Yeah. You may see a bit of a plateau for a while, but in the end of the day, particularly for the sport like swimming, it doesn't matter how quick you are, how fit you are 6 months before the race. You need to be your absolute best on the day. I mean, and that's all that matters. It does. No one cares how fast you swam 3 weeks ago if in the race you stunk it up and came last, or you burnt out and before the race you felt like you didn't have enough energy, or you're a bit niggly through the shoulder or whatever it is. So yeah, I think the old school approach is just way outdated, and there's a lot of athletes out there that could benefit from doing less but focusing a lot more on the quality.
Yeah, well, we're not, you know, in swimming as it is, we're judged on time, right? So we're trying to get faster. We're not trying to do what people did in the past. We're trying to do what nobody's done in the future. You know, we're trying to swim faster than we've ever swum. And that's from a young age all the way up to the pros, you know? So I'm of the opinion of, you just can't keep doing the same thing and expect a different result. You know, you've got to find new ways and creative ways and healthy ways. And what I've found, everybody I've talked to, all the pro athletes that I've talked to, and I've talked to many, including Olympic gold medalists and people that are trying to make the Olympic team, in this period of quarantine where they've been restricted to one workout a day or one effort a day, their quality has improved so much and their outlook on their training has improved so much. They actually want to go to training. They want to get better.
Yeah.
And what they're doing in practice is better than they've ever done before. And so it's like, it's just making sense that we're overtraining as far as I'm concerned. I put something out on my Instagram the other day that you responded to about, you know, we overtrain in swimming and, you know, most of the people responded in a positive way, but I had a lot of people send me messages of like, you don't know what you're doing. You don't know what you're talking about. Like there's always, they find ways to be critical.
Pushback.
Yeah, exactly. That pushback. So that's definitely out there.
That's
right?
That's exactly what I said before. Like, I can see why a lot of coaches or a lot of people ignorant to the fact that whatever they're doing now is not working because everybody else is doing it as well. Mm. Everybody else is doing it. So for someone just to be like, hey, I'm going to do something completely different to you guys, particularly if you're working with someone who's already at a high level. So if you get like an Olympic swimmer who has done the same thing to get to where he is now, for you to then go like, I think I can make you quicker by doing something you've never done before. It takes a big amount of courage, I guess.
Yeah.
But someone's got to do it because if you look at it properly, if you kind of understand how this process works, as you just said, like, you know, the quarantine example is such a good thing, or restrictions is such a good example. Like, if I know that today I can only go outside to train for 45 minutes, that 45 minutes is going to be the best training that I can do. I'm going to get in the most amount of work. I'm going to make sure that I make every minute count. Mm. Whereas if you told me this morning, we're going to train for 60 minutes this morning and 60 minutes tonight, I'm not really that phased what we get done in the first 60 minutes. And to be honest, in the second one, I may be already fatigued. I'm probably mentally tired as well. It's at the end of the day. Got to put in more work. So that total amount of work that you've just done in two 60-minute sessions could be equaled, if not, you know, more significant done in a shorter block and less frequency. So I think frequency plays a big role as well. And as I said, diminishing returns, like, I don't know if you wanted to get into detail about that for those that may not kind of understand it, but diminishing returns is it's so important when it comes to progress. Like, it's not always just going to project up. Doesn't matter how hard you train, how motivated you are, how disciplined you are, how much you want to win or how much you want to get quicker, by doing the same thing, it's not going to do this. It does not happen. Rarely happens ever in anything. Mm. So if you're constantly going like this, then something's got to come down like this at some point. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of people, it's at the worst time possible.
Yeah. Yeah. It's when they need it the most, when it's all falling apart. So what are the signs of overtraining? You know, overtraining's common in every discipline. So like, what are the signs of it?
I mean, there's a number of signs and it can be difficult, I guess, to differentiate between whether or not you're just fatigued and you've had a big training week or a big training month, whatever it is, and whether or not you're actually reaching overtraining. But for me, there's some really simple signs is lack of motivation, particularly if we're talking about someone who is highly motivated and disciplined in their sport. Not recovering anywhere near as well between sessions physically, you know, where they're burning out a lot quicker in the pool. Like if you're getting the laps done that usually would be quite easy and you're burning out nice and quick, that's a very easy sign. Even a decrease in appetite can be a good sign of overtraining, poor sleep quality. You know, like starting to have really average sleep. And then the obvious ones as well, like starting to get little niggles here and there that just probably shouldn't be happening. And you're just finding that you feel like you're running on a treadmill. You're going as hard as you can, but you're not really getting anywhere. So I think the best approach there is when you're starting to see those signs is instead of just thinking to yourself, because as we touched on before, the mentality often is with a high level athlete or someone who is quite motivated to be the best is to not be seen as soft or not be seen as weak or to push through it. And again, just that mentality of the harder I work, the better results I'm going to get. But if you do get to the point where you feel like you're overtraining, it's much more beneficial for you to take a day or two where you drop the load right down, even have a complete rest day where you're doing nothing. I think if you can get your head around the fact that you're not going to lose all your progress by having a day, 2 days, a week off training, then you come back and then all of a sudden your performance is much better. You're a lot more motivated to train. I mean, like in the the pandemic at the moment with coronavirus, it's mind-blowing to see how many people are absolutely pumped to go back to the gym that before would whinge and complain about having to go and train.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, because people haven't been able to go, then it's like, I can't wait to go back. So that's just like another example of how by not having too much of something, the motivation is going to stay a lot higher. And I mean, as everybody would be able to understand when listening to this and resonate with, sorry, I couldn't think of the word. Everyone can resonate with, you know, when you don't have too much of something over and over and over again, the motivation to do it is a lot higher. I mean, it's the same as anything. You do too much of something, you're eventually going to get sick of it, and then the results will show.
Yeah. Man, I'm really interested in this to finish on this topic. You know, swimmers are crazy. I don't understand. I never fully understood why we swim 2 hours in the morning. You're talking about 1 hour and 1 hour. Swimmers swim 2 hours in the morning and 2 hours at night. We tend to do that, you know, almost 6 days a week, which is just insane for somebody that swims for maybe 2 minutes, you know, max. Like I swam for 22 seconds and I was swimming, you know, 20 hours a week for 22 seconds. So it doesn't make sense. But in terms of cross training these days, obviously we're trying to do different things. In terms of aerobic fitness for swimming, are there things that you can do aerobically outside of the pool that will translate inside of the pool that we may not have to just swim up and down the pool?
Without a doubt, there's a couple of things I'll take from there. The first one you just mentioned about the time spent in the actual pool. There's a couple of examples there that their work time for their whole training session is probably around, let's say they sprint for 10 to 20 seconds. Mm-hmm. So in an hour or hour and a half of their training session they're doing, they're actually running for maybe a minute, 2 minutes.
Yeah.
But that's max effort. The quality is at the highest level. The quality, highest level. If the quality drops, then they can't. There's no point doing it because they're not training to run a slow 100 meters. They're training to run as fast as they possibly can.
Yep.
Outside of the track, like off the track, sorry, they're spending time in the gym building up the muscles and the movements that they need to then enhance their speed on the track. They're doing their mobility. They're making sure their nutrition's right. So when I think about swimming, it doesn't make as much sense to me that why you've got sprinter swimmers doing absurd amounts of volume and endurance swimming to do something like you're doing endurance swimming, but you're trying to be a fast swimmer. So I'm not sure, you know, me not being a swimmer myself, I'm not sure why there's such a big difference between a runner and a swimmer when you got two people trying to achieve a very similar thing, even though one's on a track and one's in the pool.
Yeah.
But the training is just night and day. It's just completely different. And I think, again, it just comes back to the old school approach. But when it comes to off-legs training and conditioning, I'm a big, big fan of that. Because, I mean, if you're a swimmer and your technique is sound, like you have perfect, you have great technique, you're in the pool, you're practicing, you're mastering your craft as swimming, your aerobic capacity doesn't know whether you're in the pool. Like your body doesn't go like, oh shit, I'm in the pool now, so I'm going to breathe differently than what I do when I've just done max effort battle rope, or I've just done max effort, you know, so-and-so to get my heart rate up and to build up that lactic acid and get my body to recover quickly in short periods of time. I mean, specific to swimming, obviously for a swimmer to be out doing sprints and to be out doing long runs and stuff like that, I mean, I don't really see the benefit of that as such. But off-legs conditioning or not even off-legs conditioning, whatever conditioning outside of the pool, I think is hugely beneficial. You look at AFL guys here and other sports where when you've got someone who's got an injury, this is a great example. Like I've even experienced this myself. Like I've had an injury. Back when I was playing basketball, I had an injury where I was unable to do basically any like running at all. I couldn't do any running. Obviously on court, you're doing plenty of running. For that whole period of time, I was doing a lot of interval work at a really high intensity, paired with some endurance stuff as well on the bike, and then doing a lot of battle rope stuff as well. And, you know, when I came back to being able to run, like, you know, the first couple of runs to get the K's back in the legs, you're a little bit fatigued, but my tank was better than what it was before.
Yeah.
And because of that variety in my training and not just doing the same thing over and over again, my body actually was able to perform at a much higher rate across the board instead of just that one thing.
Yeah.
So I think if you're getting in the work in the pool, your technique's good, you're building up the strength in the areas that you need to build up, and your mobility's good. I mean, I think it's really beneficial to be doing conditioning outside of the pool. As long as, you know, the main amount of work is still done in there, I find it hugely beneficial.
Yeah, mate, I'm with you. I agree. And look, I don't think we have all the answers when it comes to swimming yet. And I think that's part of, you know, being creative and experimenting. But, you know, what I've found is we're just so stuck on our ways of this is the formula for swimming. And we're so afraid to look outside of that for some reason. Like you said, track athletes are doing something completely different in order to, you know, a 100-meter runner on the track doesn't train anything like an 800-meter runner on the track. And there's not that much difference between the two, yet they're doing completely different things. And in swimming, we tend to box everybody in, and they're all doing very similar things. There's very little differentiation. I think just in terms of what we're doing in the pool, we can really look beyond just the general laps that we're looking at. So I think talking to people like you and getting new information and trying new things, I think is only going to help progress our sport. So, mate, I really appreciate your time today. I know you're super busy. You got plenty of clients to work with, and love listening to your podcast, mate. So keep it up. All right.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks a lot for having me on. And I've been really enjoying the episodes lately, and look forward to hearing plenty more of them. But definitely, this is a conversation that hopefully you can get a few more people on to chat about the same thing and start to get a bit of a collective opinion on what other people think as well. And more and more people can hear it and maybe, you know, get the courage to start trying to make a few changes and see how much of a difference it can make. And who knows what the results will be.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Cheers, mate. Thanks a lot. Take care. All right.
Thanks, mate. Thanks for having me on.
Bye.